I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it.
It's the idea of, you know, 20 minutes is hard for me to do. I'll find a lot of resistance if I try and set a resolution of 20 minutes a day. But if I can make sure I do it for just 1 minute a day, it's much more likely to happen. It's much more likely to stick, to become a habit. And then once it's entrenched as a habit, then I can start lengthening it.
This is your Kick-Ass Life podcast, episode number 269 with guest Keith MacArthur.
This is the Your Kick-Ass Life podcast with Andrea Owen, a no BS guide to self-help and badassery. Because ladies, let's face it, life's too short for it to not kick ass. And here's your host, the girl who serves it up straight with a side of crazy, Andrea Owen.
Hey there, ass kickers. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am so glad that you're here. Finally, I think that I am coming out of this haze of sickness. I have had bronchitis and got some antibiotics, and I feel like I'm finally starting to feel better and that I'm not choking every time I start to laugh or talk really fast or anything like that. So that's a plus. Also, I know I'm not the only one who's been Marie Kondo'd, right? Who's been mildly obsessed with, okay, so true confession, I never read her book and never super got into it. I'm not the type of person who holds on to things for a long time. I regularly go through my closet and get rid of things, not just mine, but I also, you know, as soon as my kids grow out of something, I know it and I get rid of it. It's just very rare that I hold on to things. I'm also not super sentimental. I know a lot of you, I think it was probably the most commented post on Instagram when I posted about my Sweet Valley High and Babysitter's Club books. I posted some pictures of them. That, my Cabbage Patch Kids and my Barbies were the only thing that I kept. And by Barbies, I mean like I kept two Barbies and a Ken, which I don't even know if they had clothes on, but that's all I kept from my childhood. My mom had kept some things too, but not a whole lot. So it's unusual for me to hold on to a lot of stuff, therefore not really needing Marie Kondo's book. But we started watching her Netflix show. Have you seen it? Where basically she goes into the homes of families and helps them organize. So it's not like the show Hoarders on, what is that, Bravo, A&E, something like that. Not that kind, but these are people who just don't have enough space for all the things they have, and she helps them organize it and just, I don't know, live their best life. So we were watching it and I sort of got the bug a little bit, and I'm like, I could organize a little bit more. I know I'm not the only one. I feel like Goodwill is busting at the seams now with everybody donating all of their stuff. But it just got me thinking about particular items that I do hold on to as someone who, you know, doesn't identify with somebody who keeps a lot of stuff. However, I, over the weekend, got rid of a few items worth noting. So there was this one particular sweatshirt that I had had. Oh my gosh, you guys are going to laugh. So this was back in probably, let's see, I was probably in my mid 20s. So it was, I don't even know what year it was. It was a long time ago, probably about 20 years ago. I bought this Abercrombie & Fitch zip up hooded sweatshirt that was A, too big for me because they didn't have my size, and B, it was already worn. So it looked like the thing was like 50 years old, not even just a little bit worn, but the thing was worn out and it was meant to look like that. And it was really expensive for me at the time. It was probably like $60 for this beat up looking sweatshirt. And I wore that thing all the time. And I just kept it for all these years, and I would wear it camping. Like maybe that was the only time that I would wear it. And I'm looking in my closet and I'm like, I'm 43 years old. Why am I keeping this sweatshirt that I had in my 20s that I don't even like anymore, that I don't even want to wear? Now people, if I wore it, people would legitimately be like, is Andrea okay? does somebody need to help her? No. So I had this in the back of my closet forever and ever. I also had this really beautiful black sweater that I bought at the Banana Republic, probably around the same time in my life, that I just loved so much. And it's like one of those classic sweaters, but also it doesn't fit me anymore. And same thing with a couple of pairs of jeans that actually aren't that old, but they don't fit me anymore. I believe that when I bought them at the time, they were a little bit tight. And now I don't even know if I could get them up over my hips. And they were really expensive designer jeans. Have you ever done that where you've held onto something because it was so expensive and you're just like, I don't know, maybe someday I'm going to fit into it. I don't know what the rules are for these things. Like, I am all for getting rid of stuff that you have outgrown that just doesn't fit you anymore. But for some reason, it was because those jeans were so dang expensive. I'm like, no, I'm not getting rid of these. And I've really gotten to the place, or at least been really working towards getting to that place where I'm like, it's okay that I'm two sizes bigger than those jeans are. Remember when I told you all that story about my underwear and how my underwear, I was mad at my underwear because there was something wrong with them. Turns out they were just too small. I had to buy bigger underwear. Okay. That was maybe like a year ago, 18 months ago, maybe. Now those underwear are starting to be like, yeah, we're having a hard time here. A little help. So anyways, that's happening. So I have these jeans and I'm like, why am I holding onto these jeans? I need to just get rid of them. And I was talking to my husband about it and I'm like, they just make me feel like shit when I look at them in my closet and I'm like, oh yeah, those jeans that I spent so much money on and that don't fit me anymore. And he's like, are you trying to tell me they don't spark joy? And I said, exactly, they don't spark joy anymore. But I was thinking about it, and I have a friend here in town, and really, like, I didn't wear those jeans that many times. I could probably count on two hands how many times I actually did get to wear those two pairs of jeans. But I have a friend here in town who's pretty much my former size. And I told her, and I'm like, I have these really great designer jeans that are in like perfect, near perfect condition. Do you want to look at them and see if you want them? And so she's like, yeah, I'll take a look at them. And I was telling my husband about that. And I'm like, yeah, Teresa might want him. And he's like, pauses for a second. And he's like, guys don't do that. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, we don't look at our closet and see a pair of pants and think, oh yeah, those would look great on Dave. I'm like, you mean you don't think to yourself, I'd rather give them to him. And then that way, when I see them on him, I'd be like, oh, I'm so glad that those fit you. He's like, no, we don't do that. So that was funny. And just curious if anybody else out there is getting the bug to really go through their stuff and reorganize. I feel like it always feels great to get rid of stuff, to reorganize, and just feel like you have some kind of control. I'm just a big fan of decluttering. I think that it can, I'm going to say it, I think it can change your life. I really do. I think that clutter can just add to the overwhelm that we have, and it just can take up more space that you don't need and just energetically bring you down. So maybe that's your challenge for the week, y'all, is baby steps. I'm not asking you to go into your house and take everything out of your closet and put it on your bed and see what sparks joy. If you want to do that and have the time and space, by all means do it. But maybe it's just one cabinet. I don't know about you, but my Tupperware cabinet is the thing that becomes the bane of my existence. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's a junk drawer that you have that just you need to get some crap out of there. Maybe it's your shoes. It's just one baby step that you can take to make yourself feel better, to feel less overwhelmed, just to energetically feel a little bit cleaner. All right. I also wanted to remind you that we are still accepting applications for the Mentorship Masterclass. This is my flagship program, y'all. I only keep this open to a select small group of women who are ready to change their lives. No, we don't declutter your closet. Although if you want that as a challenge, some people actually bring that to the calls and that's what they want to do to change their life. But we dive deep into shame resilience. I teach you better coping skills, better coping mechanism, courage, confidence, vulnerability, boundaries, and hard conversations. Because I cannot tell you that the answer to your problems is to be more vulnerable and then not teach you how to have boundary conversations and things like that. So that's also something that we learn, and also super excited to invite the Mentorship Masterclass to my house this year for our workshop and retreat here in person in North Carolina. You can read all the information over at yourkickasslife.com/mentorship. That link, of course, is in the show notes. And the applications come straight to me. And if it's a great fit, then you and I will hop on the phone to chat about it. See if it's something that you want to dive into this year. I would be honored to have you. I'm even just honored to read applications and hear about the things that are going on in your life and the challenges and struggles and the things that you want to accomplish for 2019 and beyond. So thank you for all of y'all who have filled out an application and just the really beautiful, amazing conversations that I've had along the way. yourkickasslife.com/mentorship. All right. Super pumped to share with you today's conversation with Keith MacArthur. Let me tell you a little bit about Keith before we jump in. Keith MacArthur got a second chance in life in 2017 when his little sister donated her kidney for transplant. Now he writes and podcasts about his journey to becoming happier and healthier. Keith is the creator of My Instruction Manual, a website, podcast, and book series providing high quality personal development and content. So without further ado, y'all, here is Keith. Keith, welcome to the show.
It's so good to be here, Andrea. Thanks for having me.
I am really looking forward to this conversation because the tables have turned. You've interviewed me twice.
I have.
And they've been such great conversations and I've enjoyed speaking to you so much. And I knew that, especially this time of year, it was a good idea to have you on. And we're actually recording this. I know this podcast episode will come out in February, but you and I are recording. You're actually my first interview of the year. Congratulations.
Thank you. Very fun.
But it's the new year and I released a podcast episode, my very first one for the year, and it was called New Year, New You. And then a parentheses, I think it was the title of it was You Don't Need No Stinkin' Morning Routine or something like that. Because I feel like, okay, so just so you know, I have an audience of high achievers and I feel like the new year can be overwhelming for some. Do you think so? I mean, is it just me?
No, I think that's true. We can definitely put a lot of expectations on ourselves. And, you know, one of the interesting things about New Year's is I know you talk a lot about shame. Yeah. And one of the things that's interesting is, psychologically, is that our mind kind of doesn't ever see, you know, although we're always one person, we kind of see ourselves as like a past, present, and future version of ourselves. And part of the reason why people put so much pressure on themselves around New Year's is because they can kind of relegate all of their mistakes to last year and think about it as a fresh new start. And they kind of can put aside that shame. And it puts a lot of pressure on you, you know, especially if you already have this belief that you need to be perfect to be worthwhile, which I have. If you make mistakes in the new year, they feel bigger than a mistake that you might have made just a few days before.
That's interesting. I had never thought about that. That reminds me of a podcast episode that I listened to and I cannot remember where I heard it. So sorry, everyone. The link will not be in the show notes. But they were talking about, it was probably This American Life or somebody's TED Talk. I think it was somebody's TED Talk. Mm-hmm. They were talking about language and how there are cultures that don't have past tense language. And so it might be Asian cultures. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing about this too, but I don't remember the details either.
And that they look at things differently and they don't have, I'm pretty sure it was kind of what you were talking about, that they don't look at things like that. It's very like present focused rather than past or future. So, but I love that perspective. That's interesting. I never actually thought about that, but okay. I'll give it to you guys that January feels like a fresh start.
Right.
Thank you. There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
So, join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom.
Get out of there, life gunk.
Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking It.
Well, I know that you're a believer that people don't need to wait until the new year to start to change their life. So what do you think of the new year, new you mentality in general?
Well, to be honest, I've always kind of been fascinated with this idea that you can go to bed on New Year's Eve and wake up as a new and improved version of yourself.
That'd
so like
amazing.
So many people, I would set New Year's resolutions year after year and not succeed in them, not be able to do what I'd planned to do. And so I sort of found myself making the same resolutions year after year. And then just I guess it's 2 years ago now, 2017, I had a kind of big crisis in my life and I had kidney failure and learned that if I didn't get a transplant or dialysis, I was going to die. And fortunately for me, my little sister stepped forward and she donated a kidney to me. And I kind of felt like, you know, I had been given this chance for a new life and I needed to learn to live it better. And I kind of shifted everything that I was doing. I'd been focused on publishing books in one area, and this kind of new lease on life really made me fascinated with the idea of how to really become happier and healthier and achieve goals that I've been trying to do with my life for so long. And so I started, you know, reading everything about it, and that's how I came across your podcast. And so that kind of led me to, you know, starting to write books and help other people share some of the things that I've learned. And so this this book on resolutions was part of that.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that about you. That's amazing. I've had a fascination with being a kidney donor. Side note. And I was telling somebody about it and I thought, like, why not? I have two, you know, like right. Yeah. Just anonymously, not even to a family member, just somebody that needs it. And I don't remember who I was talking to and they thought it was crazy. And they're like, what if... But you're a mom. Like, what if your other kidney fails? And I'm like, why would you? That's not something I'd never even thought of. Like, just, I have two of them. Like, what? I don't think I need two, but that's so interesting.
So I don't know how it works in the US, but I'm in Canada and in Ontario, because my sister donated the kidney, if something ever went wrong with her other kidney, she's right at the top of the list to get a donation. Yeah. So that may be the same in the US as well.
I hope so.
Yeah.
But our healthcare system is so awesome. I mean, I couldn't understand why it wouldn't be the case. I jest.
Right.
Okay. All right. Side note on that. So in your book, it's called Everybody Needs to Go Out and Get It: Winning Resolutions, How to Achieve Your Biggest Goals and Wildest Dreams Once and For All. The link is in the show notes, but it includes science-based strategies, which I love a good science-based strategy, for achieving your biggest, baddest goals. So can you share one or two of those strategies that listeners can maybe start using today?
Yeah. So I think that the biggest mistake that people make when they're setting resolutions is, and this is especially the case when it comes to New Year's resolutions, is they treat it more like a wish than an actual commitment. So I think if you're setting a resolution, you have to really be serious about it and treat it like a promise to yourself. And, you know, I kind of use the term resolutions interchangeably with the idea of a really big goal. So don't think of it as something that has to happen January 1st. This can happen any time of year. But in order to set the right resolution, I have something that I call the 6 P's of resolution setting. And so the first one is precise, which is the idea that you need to be really clear about what success looks like. If you set a resolution just to get fit, how do you know when you've got there, right?
Yeah.
So be really clear about what that means. And wherever possible, include dates of when you're going to achieve it by. The second P is proximal, and that's kind of a scientific word, but it basically means near term. So I don't like the idea of setting resolutions for a full year. I recommend that people set resolutions of no more than 3 months. So if you've got a really big goal, break it down into more manageable steps, because most people do better with shorter term goals than with longer term goals. The third one is practical, and that's the idea that it actually has to be achievable, right? Stretch goals don't work so well for resolutions. If you really believe that you can get it done, you're much more likely to get it done. The next one is positive. So it's the idea that you take a look at your resolution and make sure that you don't have words in there that are negative. So words like, let's say you want to give up soda. Mm-hmm. You want to give up sugary drinks. Instead of saying quit Coke, reframe it to be something more along the lines of choose water. So just that shift in the language reframes how your mind thinks about it. And then there's science that shows that when we set a goal with a negative, where we kind of are more likely to obsess over it, it becomes more difficult to achieve.
That's interesting. I'm going to stop you on that one for a second, because I heard about, so a few years ago, my husband and I decided, I think this was in about 2012, we decided to pay off of our debt after we finally and by we, I mean me, finally actually looked at it and added it all up. And I was like, holy shit, it's 60 grand. And I started a spreadsheet. We sat down and figured out how we were going to do it and made a plan. And I named the spreadsheet, I think it was something like debt or something like that. And then I was listening to some money podcast and they said something similar, like don't name it something like that, name it something more positive. And so I changed it to payoff ! Yeah. And it actually felt better to look at that. And, you know, when I was searching for it in my Google Docs, I would search for that instead of debt, because it just, it's a small shift, but I understand that it can make a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And there have been these famous studies where two groups of people were brought in and they were kind of primed to think about polar bears. And one group was told, you can think about whatever you want, including polar bears. And the other group was told, you can think about anything you want except polar bears. And that second group that was, you know, primed to not think about them, thought about polar bears much more often. So it's the same when it comes to setting our goals and resolutions. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the last two, one is peaceful. And that means that your resolutions have to align with your core values as well as with each other. So often people will set resolutions that are in conflict with each other. And sometimes that's because the resolutions require a bunch of time. So if you've got, you know, let's say you want to spend more time with your kids, but you also want to train for a marathon, but the time that you have to train, you know, to do your long run is on the weekend, maybe those goals aren't compatible. Right. And maybe there's something else you can figure out to do it. So a better example of one where the goals are peaceful is if you have two resolutions, one where you want to, you know, be more social and spend more time with other people, and the other where you want to read more books, you could join a book club where you meet in person to discuss it. And then the final one is promised, and I've already touched on this, but it's the idea that a resolution is a promise to yourself, and you have to really commit to making sure that you're ready to make it happen.
Yes. I love all of that. There was a couple of things that I thought of when you were talking about that. What was the first one again? What was the name of it?
Precise.
Okay, maybe it was the second one that I was thinking
of. Proximal, the short-term goals?
No, it was I think it was the precise one because okay. When I was thinking, this was years ago, I think it was when we were about to move out to the country, and I really thought about getting chickens. And I thought that would be really neat. And what I realized was that I like the idea of having chickens. Yeah. In theory, I loved it. And I think it's so neat when I see people who have chickens. Oh, and you get eggs, and I could give them to my friends, and we could name them. And unfortunately, number one, I have a bird dog that would be just a disaster. I mean, it would become her right. life's mission to hunt them. And also, which is not peaceful.
Right.
Your pee there. But yeah. Also, I think it was a realization that was a goal that I didn't really want. Like so I think it's sometimes helpful for people. And same thing, like maybe a little bit more realistic is being a marathoner. Like I like to run, but I have really no desire to run a marathon. I like 3 miles, that's it. But it you know, there's something about being a runner, and people ask me fairly often, like, oh, have you ever run a marathon, or are you training for a marathon? I'm like, no, ew, never.
Right. No, it's true. Yeah, I run as well. And that is a common question.
Yeah. I did a half marathon once, and I never want to do it again. It was miserable.
Yeah. And it kind of puts the focus on not just on the doing, not just enjoying the run, but on actually accomplishing something. Right. And mm-hmm. it's okay to just enjoy the exercise if that's something that you enjoy.
Exactly. I do, but not long distances. I'm like in and out. Well, and the other question I had was about, I think it was when you were talking about the proximal one and stretch goals. Mm-hmm. I have found that here's my personality when it comes to goals is that I have learned in my old age of 43 years that part of my personality is just competitive, and I like fun competitive. So my husband and I got off the workout wagon and we both kind of wanted to get back on board, and I wanted to do something competitive with him. And I'm like, let's just say we're going to work out, you know, X amount of times, and whoever, like I came up with this whole plan and I was so excited. He's not competitive. He's like, I don't want to do that. And I was so disappointed. So right. I know that works for me. Like friendly competition works really well for me. However, when it's a stretch goal, I know I need accountability. So for instance, I'm in a mastermind right now, and you know, there was this pre-work, and she asked us, what is a stretch goal for finances? And I typed it out, and I said, and in the next breath, I said, and I'm going to tell you all the ways this can't happen.
Yeah,
but I was being honest. Because that's the
accountability
mindset.
Accountability is so important for a lot of people. And I don't know if are you familiar with Gretchen Rubin's Four Tendencies?
I have some clients that love it, have told me about it, but I'm not intimately familiar.
So basically, the author Gretchen Rubin has these, basically she says that there's four kinds of people when it comes to commitments, and they have to do with whether you're good at setting commitments to yourselves and to others. And the biggest category is people that she calls obligers. And those are people who are really good at keeping commitments to other people. So if you're good at getting your work done on time for your boss and you don't miss deadlines, but if you make a commitment to yourself to go regularly to the gym, that's a lot harder. You don't prioritize it the same way. And those people in particular, accountability can really help with them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for someone like you, you've got a big platform. You can go public with your accountability and talk about it on the podcast or Instagram if you choose to.
That's how I trained for my triathlon last year.
Yeah. And then for a lot of people, they don't want to go public, but having an accountability partner can work really well. And the science there shows that it actually doesn't matter who your accountability partner is. It doesn't have to be someone who's chasing after the same goal. And even whether it's, you know, your spouse or a stranger, doesn't seem to matter. What you need is someone who can both be understanding when you fail, but also really challenge you at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that if you find, you know, the right friend or someone who can do that for you, then you're in good shape to be held accountable.
That's interesting. And you know, I've been coaching for 10 plus years and been in business for 8. And I signed up for this mastermind and I hired this specific person because of what you just talked about. I wanted someone, I didn't so much need someone who's going to help me with business strategy. When I was talking to her before I hired her, and I gave her a suitcase full of money. It was a lot of money for the whole year. Mm-hmm. And I said, I know that you're going to hold my feet to the fire. And that's, I knew exactly what I needed and wanted in terms of who's going to push me, who's going to lovingly push me and not let me forget who I am. And I think that that can be really important to get to know yourself and what you need. Do you need tough love or do you crumble under it? Do you need just someone who's like your cheerleader and who's like, you can do it? Or do you feel like that's just nauseating and platitudes and blech? But don't you think that's super important to get clear on how you're motivated with accountability?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a job like yours where you're a solopreneur can be really challenging if you don't have that accountability.
When I'm the boss and nobody's, nobody's giving me deadlines but me.
Yeah. Cause so often, you know, we can just feel, we know what we need to do and we can feel bad if we don't do it, but it can be a challenge also because you feel like there's so many different things that you want to prioritize, right? You've got little kids and should you be spending time with them or spending time with your work? And so if you have these business goals,
scrolling mindlessly through Instagram, Keith, is very important.
Absolutely. That's part of your job.
Right. No, it's not. But yes. And I know there are some people who work for themselves and own their businesses who listen, but I think that it can become even in a 9-to-5, you know, I meet a lot of women who want to get promoted and want to climb the ladder and they struggle with, you know, volunteering for extra projects or asking their boss like, hey, can you put me on that? I think, you know, I can do really well and blah, 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 and all that stuff. So
well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
I know that sometimes people will set out to reach a goal and get off track a little bit and then abandon the goal completely. So what are some ways people can get back on track and continue with their one goal? Because a lot of people, they're just like throw their hands up and be like, forget it. I suck at this.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think a big part of making sure, well, so a big part is before you even start is to take time to plan out your resolution. And so as an example, what you want to do is think ahead and think of all the stumbling blocks that are going to appear in your life that could throw you off course, right? So if you're trying to not eat dessert, as an example, but you know you've got your niece's birthday party coming up and you're going to be offered cake in 2 weeks, are you going to say no there, or is it okay for you to make an exception there and have a piece of cake and know that it's not a failure. And if you're making that decision up front, then you're not going to kind of get trapped in that shame spiral that we can often feel if we make what we feel is the wrong mistake in the moment. And, you know, for many of us, that can just get us off track, and then we'll feel like a failure, and we'll just go out and start eating whatever we want. And so you plan it out ahead. And as part of that, as part of planning out your contingencies for what you'll do in different situations, what you want to do is come up with a plan before you even start about what you'll do if you stumble, because so many of us will stumble, and it's important, you know, progress is so much more important than perfection, right? And so if we know that a stumble is okay, and we decide that up front, and, you know, say that it's okay if I make a mistake, I'm just, here's what I'm going to do next, then we're in much better shape.
I never really put words to that, but yeah, I call that like getting out in front of it. And that's typically what, if someone's, you know, in traditional life coaching, that's a question that many coaches ask is, you know, what are the obstacles that you foresee might happen as you walk into this?
Yeah. Some people call it if then planning.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. Oh, I love a good plan. I was just talking to one of my clients yesterday, and she was saying, she's like, I get obsessed with the plan way more so than the actual event. She's like, I'll walk away from the event, but the planning, like, I'm all over it. I think that happens to a lot of people. One of the and this might be a little bit of an extreme example, but I don't think so, because you know, there's a lot of listeners who have struggled with drinking in the past and or who are sober. One of the things kind of circling back to what you just said, one of the things that I did when I got sober is, especially because my husband, my partner, is doesn't struggle with addiction. And so it's hard for him. It was in the beginning, it was hard for him to understand, like, why can't you just have one drink? And I'm like, let me tell you, that's another story for another time. But I told him pretty early on in my sobriety, I said, if I ever tell you that I think I'm okay, I think I can just have one drink, I am lying. And that is a huge red flag. I also said the same thing to my doctor. I told her, you know, I struggle with addiction. If I ever come in here and ask you for Percocet or Vicodin because I have an injury, I am lying.
Yeah.
Sound the alarm. So I think, I mean, what is your take on that? Because I have found it important in my life, and I call that just telling on myself.
Yeah, I think it's a really great strategy. Some people will call that pre-commitment. So it's the idea that not only are you changing your environment to make it more difficult to do the thing you want to do, you're actually taking steps to put roadblocks in your way of achieving that goal. So one of the people I talked to in the book had a goal to quit smoking, and she started smoking when she was 13, and it was really tough for her. So the day that she decided to quit smoking, she gave her husband all her money and bank and credit cards. So there was just be no way that she could go out and buy a pack of cigarettes, right? So yeah, setting those, if you know you're going to be tempted, setting those steps so that you make it impossible for yourself is a great, great strategy.
It's interesting because, you know, I work in the world of shame, and I teach shame resilience, and I've heard so many shame stories, and I've become pretty intimate with the emotion and hearing people's stories. And I'm not going to say, but, and I'm just kind of like thinking out loud here for a second. So bear with me, y'all. I wonder if, and maybe it's more of a question, if shame can be a bit of a motivator. Because, so for instance, a light example of when I told everybody that I was training for the triathlon, if I had quit, it would have been a mixture of embarrassment and shame of not following through. I would have felt kind of like a dick. So what is your take on that?
I don't know. I mean, I would say, I think that you're more of an expert in shame than I am. I know you trained with, or did some of the Brené Brown training, right?
And I'm not saying like, let's use it as a tool.
Right.
My question more specifically is what do you see in people? Like, how can it be effective? Is it never effective? Like what do you see?
I would maybe differentiate between a feeling of failure and a feeling of shame.
Yeah.
And that idea that you know, a feeling of failure can be motivating as long as we don't feel that we are failures. And when I think of shame, I think of it as, you know, taking a failure and internalizing it and actually becoming that failure. So yes. I would say probably that that's never going to be healthy.
You are an expert on shame, Keith. Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So that's how I would see it. But thank you.
Huge, you're welcome. Huge differentiator of feeling that you failed, which we all have, and feeling like a failure. There's a huge difference, and it's not just semantics. And yeah, I could go on and on about that. But I find it, and I think, well, maybe this brings me to my next question, is what do you see the difference is with people who, like, do you think some people are just born with a personality who get shit done, like who make their goals happen as best as possible, and people who continuously fall off the wagon?
I do. Yeah. I mean, you know, I do kind of buy into the Gretchen Rubin philosophy that there are people who are just really good at setting or keeping commitments that they make to themselves and commitments they make to others and others and other people who kind of struggle with that. You know, so, like, I feel like I'm one of those people who is pretty good at keeping commitments to myself, and it helps me to do the writing and working that I need to do from home, mm-hmm. Where I'm also my own boss, but it comes with some challenges too. Like, it's not, I wouldn't necessarily say that one is better than the other. It's more about knowing what you are and then identifying the steps to help you get there. Like, so for me, I become so focused on a goal that I've set for myself that it's really hard for me to recognize when the situation's changed and to kind of reassess and to pivot. And so that's kind of the thing that I need to work against when I think of my own tendency. But for others, if they're, you know, one of the tendencies is called a rebel, and those people have a really hard time because they kind of want to rebel against everything, whether it's a commitment that their boss sets for themselves or a commitment that they've made to themselves. And so they have to do kind of different kinds of strategies according to Gretchen Rubin, where let's say your doctor tells you you need to lose weight to be healthy, and you kind of, your instinct is, oh, well, I'm not going to lose weight because they tell me to. Maybe that person reframes it and says, oh, I think my doctor thinks I can't lose weight. And then they take it as more of a challenge to try to do what their doctor wants. So I do think that some people have it easier than others. And you have to kind of know what works for you and figure out the strategies for yourself.
That's interesting. That reminds me of when I talk about self-sabotage, and that can be complicated because everyone's personality is different. I mean, it can go back to your family of origin. It can go back to so many things. That's really interesting. Now I'm going to have to go read that book. You put another book on my list. Dang it.
Yeah, she's got two books related to that. And so the first one is Better Than Before, where she kind of introduces the concept, and that's all about habits and how to set good habits. And then the idea was so popular that she expanded on it in The Four Tendencies.
Okay. Well, and that's the thing that I hear probably the most from my community is the specific goal of, and it can be anything from, really the two big ones are consistently working out and eating better. And from being from the fitness industry, I completely understand that lack of movement, lack of momentum brings on lack of motivation. So it's that initial, like, getting your ass off the ground that can be the most difficult and that people tend to have the hardest time with. And so what I always start with is like, well, what has worked for you in the past? Like, what actually motivates you? And then go from there. So what do you find? I guess my question specifically is, what do you, and maybe it's a little bit too general, but what do you think about the people who maybe they're the rebels, like, that you were just talking about, the people who, for instance, they sign up for the gym, they pay for it, they get all the food, it's all prepped in their refrigerator, and then they go to work, they don't go to the gym, they end up like eating out, and then they feel like shit about themselves. What do you think is, either what do you think is going on with those people, or how can they take the next step to try to, what are some strategies, I guess, for them?
Yeah, I mean, it could be that they're rebels. It could also be that they're the obligers, where, you know, they have great plans when it comes to themselves, but they don't prioritize the goals that they've set for themselves. And so I think accountability there is maybe the key strategy. And, yeah. and here's an example. Like my wife told me about someone that she works with where they're a couple. They both decided they want to go to the gym more, but the woman is the one who's most keen to go to the gym, and her husband kind of like, if he has the chance, you know, he knows in his mind he wants to go, but when it's the actual moment, he's not so keen to go.
It's like so being the chickens. Like he likes it in theory.
Exactly. Exactly. Except this is, I think maybe, you know, when you thought about it, you know, you don't want to do the chickens here. He knows he wants to do it. He just can't get around to it. So what they decided is that he, keeps the workout clothes for both of them. So there's kind of pressure put on him where if she, when she wants to work out, he has to come meet her because he's got her workout clothes. And then once he's there, he's like, okay, I might as well go to the gym as well since I'm here and have our clothes. So yeah, it's figuring out, I think, the accountability that works for you, and finding out just ways to, feel like you're not letting someone down. So if you have an appointment with a trainer, rather than just a gym membership, then you may feel like I'm letting my trainer down if I don't show up. And so mm-hmm. they're more likely to go.
Yes. That, and what I've suggested to people in the past is I look at their goals and they're like, you know, they've planned out to work out 5 days a week and do their meal planning 6 days a week. And I'm like, that is entirely like, I don't even want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that comes back to it having to be practical, right? Like, practical. So stretch goals don't work if you're sometimes just, it's premeditated failure.
I have a lot of all or nothing listeners who, yeah, the stretch goals is their middle name.
Yeah.
And all of y'all listening, that's you, maybe just once a week, just start there. And trust me, like I used to be like, go big or go home. I am consistently telling my people in my programs and my clients, like, pull it back a notch. Like what is really, really realistic for you? Like what is something that you can actually accomplish? But I want to circle back one more thing and ask you about, because you mentioned environment, and in your book, you talk about taking charge of your environment in order to achieve your goals. So how much does environment, I mean, it's kind of obvious, like how much does environment play in goal setting and goal achieving? And what are some ways people can create an environment for goal success?
I think it's huge. And, you know, I think one of the biggest mistakes that people make is that they tend to rely too much on their own willpower or self-control, where really the best way to maximize your willpower or self-control is to not have to rely on it. So you want to structure.
If it were just that easy, like, can you imagine just What's willpower that? And self-control? Like,
yeah, I know. It's and it's tough. But if you can structure your environment to make the temptations more difficult, you're going to be much better off. So if you want to, you know, I keep coming back to the food examples because that is definitely, I agree common. With you that food and fitness are the two most common resolutions that people set. And so if it's about food, don't bring home that ice cream or those chips. Like for me, if salty snacks, if I have a bag of them, I'll just keep eating them till I'm done. So I have to make sure that if I'm ever going to have a snack, I just take a handful of chips and then put the bag away, or else I'll just keep eating the bag till it's done. But if you don't want to eat them at all, just don't bring them into your house. Before you start, you know, purge your house, go through and look for all of the things that could be stumbling blocks and get them out.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you get sober, like don't have booze in your house or you'll drink it like I did.
Right. Yeah.
My weakness is pirate booty. That's the only thing. Like I think I just dodge that bullet when it comes to food. And I've never been one that can eat. Like I can't eat an entire pint of ice cream. Like I feel sick very quickly. And same with chips and stuff like that. But pirate booty, I don't know what it is. I don't know what kind of crack cocaine they put in that pirate booty bag.
Okay. I don't know what it is. What is it?
Do they not have that in Canada?
Maybe not.
Keith.
You can never live here.
It's like, what can I relate it to, you guys? It's sort of like, do you know what smart food popcorn is? Like the white cheddar? Yep. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like that, except it's more like corn puffs.
Okay.
But it's the white cheddar.
I don't think we have it here. But okay, so that's your weakness.
Airy and light. Go right now and order some on Amazon Canada. And hopefully they have it. And no, it's one of those things where I put it in my office because my daughter will eat. She's just my little mixed snacky queen. She'll eat it all. But that's just the one thing that I will eat the whole thing. And I do not apologize for it. it's fine. It's not on my resolution.
Right.
I have one more question for you. I'm just really curious. Like, what are some goals that you're working on right now?
So for the book, I sat some three resolutions that I set as part of kind of the research for the book, so I could kind of test some of the different approaches that I was learning about. And so one of them was weight loss related. One of them was around finishing the book by a certain date. And then the third one was around just applying sunscreen every day. You know, it's something that is good for everybody to do,
welcome
but
to
because
middle
of
age.
The because of the meds that I'm on related to my transplant, it's even more important for me because I'm kind of more likely to get skin cancer because my immune system's lowered and the meds also make me burn more easily. Anyway, so I had those three. One of the ones that I set for 2019, and I, you know, I like the idea of setting resolutions heading into the new year, but I also talk in the book about how it's not, you know, essential. And I also talk about how Mondays are a great day to start resolutions. So what I actually did is started my resolutions the Monday after New Year's. So I really made sure that I had time to plan and prepare for them. And one of them is around meditation. And it's something that I know really helps me, but I have a hard time doing it consistently. And so my resolution is just to meditate for at least 1 minute a day. And 1 minute is one of the strategies I talk about in the book as well, because, you know, there's a lot of experts in mindfulness who say you have to meditate for at least 20 minutes a day for it to be useful. But one of the things I talk about in the book is shrinking your resolutions. And so it's the idea of minimizing the resistance. And this is especially when it comes to setting a habit, something you want to do every single day. It's the idea of, you know, 20 minutes is hard for me to do. I'll find a lot of resistance if I try and set a resolution of 20 minutes a day. But if I can make sure I do it for just 1 minute a day, it's much more likely to happen. It's much more likely to stick, to become a habit. And then once it's entrenched as a habit, then I can start lengthening it. But yeah, so that's one of my 2019 goals, is to meditate for at least 1 minute every day.
I love that. I've never heard 1 minute. I mean, that's definitely something I can do. I have found mine are pretty basic. I feel like it's the essential. If I don't put it in my calendar, it will not get done. Mm-hmm. And especially now that I've gotten a little bit older and have more responsibilities adulting, and I'm very, very, me and my Google calendar are very, we're very close, and right. I have to put it in or I will not. Like, I remember when I was younger and didn't have kids and had all the time in the world to do whatever I wanted, I would work out after work and it was so much easier. And then as I got older, I felt like, why can't I just do that anymore? It's like, well, 'cause I'm damn tired and it just wasn't working with my schedule. And so I've had to change things, but yeah, if it is not blocked out on my calendar, I will find a reason to. And I do what you were talking about before with that couple. I lay out my workout clothes the night before. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
that's another good example of structuring your environment to make it easier.
Yeah. And I see it in the morning and it reminds me, I mean, I would have seen it on my calendar anyway, but it's just like doing these small things too. And what I've also done is, this might seem like a small thing, but it probably goes with the environment thing. I got workout clothes that I really, really like.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. You want to put them on, right?
Yeah. And it just made it feel like it was more sacred. Like, this is important to me. And, you know, why am I focused only on the clothes that I wear outside of the gym? And yeah, that mattered to me. And I threw away all the clothes. And part of it was like, I threw away my workout clothes that I had for my first marriage. It was symbolic.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, I don't need these anymore.
Yeah.
And they were kind of dated anyway. But yeah, I went and bought all new workout clothes. And I feel like it totally made a difference. Like, just, yeah, environment. So this has been so enlightening. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today.
Thank you for having me.
Where do you want people to go so they can find more about you?
Yeah. So myinstructionmanual.com is where they can find my website. So there's information there on the book. The podcast is also My Instruction Manual. So you can find that anywhere you listen to Andrea's podcast. And the book, Winning Resolutions, you can get it on any of the online retailers. So Amazon or iBooks or Barnes & Noble. It's available everywhere in paperback or ebook.
Amazing. I will have all those show notes in the all the links in the show notes. And also, I feel like, and you guys go listen to Keith's podcast. You're such a great interviewer. And I was already telling you, like, I did, oh my God, like 70 interviews last year. And you were one of my favorites. You're so good at what you do.
Nice.
Yeah, go listen to Keith's podcast, My Instruction Manual, and the book is Winning Resolutions, How to Achieve Your Biggest Goals and Wildest Dreams Once and For All. Thank you so much for being here, Keith. And listeners, thank you so, so, so much for joining me again. I know how valuable your time is, and I do not take it for granted. I am so incredibly grateful. And until next time, I will see you all out in cyberspace. Bye-bye.
Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.